firecracker going down the wrong way.
God damn, I'm coming. I'll send someone.
Fast, he's bleeding. I hung up, grabbed the dish towel, and ran back to the giant. Kellen. The sun had gone down while I was inside, so he was a shadow and my dress flashed white in the moonlight.
You called?
He said. I nodded. As gentle as I could be, I wrapped the towel around his arm. Blood soaked through the towel and dribbled into my hand. I crouched in front of him, watching his eyes go far away. He was getting lost. Kellen? I put my hand on his cheek and brought him back to me. When I pointed up to the north, he turned his head to look. Cassiopeia. Andromeda. Perseus. Cepheus. Cygnus. Ursa Minor. With the sun gone, we could see all the stars, and the planets, too. Mercury, Saturn, Jupiter, Venus, Mars, like stairs from the moon down to the meadow. I kept naming them until I heard a car coming up the road. After Liam and Butch took Kellen away, I thought about how he left spaces for me when he talked. If I saw him again, I decided I might put words in those spaces.
5. Kellen. August 1977.
I would have gone the next day to see the girl in the meadow, but the bike wreck about turned me into hamburger. I ended up with a concussion, a dislocated shoulder, 3 busted ribs, a twisted ankle, and my arm broken in 2 places with the bone poking out. After I spent a week in the hospital, it was another 2 months before I could do any work for Liam. 2 months cooling my heels at Kutchin's small engine. The old man was decent to me, and I liked the work. You spend the day putting engines together. You go home feeling like you done something worthwhile. Once I was healed up enough to be any use in a fight, I did a few runs for Liam. Me and Butch took this slicked-up Monte Carlo to Des Moines, trunk full of meth. Good money. The summer was near gone before I made it back up to the farmhouse. Nobody answered when I knocked, but the door was unlocked. Soon as I walked in, a stink of dirty dishes hit me. The kitchen sink was full of them, with flies buzzing on rotten food. All these bowls and glasses with mold growing in the bottoms. "Hello? It's Kellen from down the hill. Anybody home?" I hollered. Nobody answered, but in the bedroom off the front hall I heard somebody snoring, just a little louder than the fly buzz. I poked my head around the doorframe and whoever was in bed rolled over. This thin white leg and a patch of dark hair poked out of the covers. Liam's wife? I took a step back so I couldn't see her. "Mrs. Quinn, I was looking for the little blonde girl. Wavy?" It was fuzzy as hell in my head. More than a couple times in the hospital, I thought maybe I'd dreamed it.
"She took Donald somewhere."
I didn't know who Donald was, but at least the girl was probably real, since Liam's wife didn't say. "What the hell are you talking about?" "Do you need anything, Mrs. Quinn? You okay?"
"Who are you?" she said.
"Jesse Joe Kellen. I work for Liam."
"Fucking asshole."
"I'm gonna go. I'm sorry I bothered you." I beat it back down the hallway, hoping real hard the whole deal wouldn't get back to Liam. Had my hand on the doorknob on my way out when the mess in the kitchen pulled me up short again. Was the little girl living there in that filth? It was the end of October before I went by the house again. Every time my arm twinged, whenever I did any work on my bike, I thought about the way the girl laid her hand on my cheek and said my name. I spent years trying to get people to stop calling me Junior, but damned if that wasn't the first time I really felt like Kellen was my name. After I got the bike back in running order, the first place I took it was the road up to Liam's house. The gas tank still being primer gray made me old lady cautious, easy on the throttle going up the drive to the house. The kitchen door was unlocked again, and when I swung it open, the girl was there. She stood next to the table, her hair combed smooth, no leaves in it. There was a baby, too, clutching at her dress. And just like that, I recollected the reason I'd been sent to the house the night I wrecked. A bag of groceries. Ricky had gone to the store. But she couldn't take the food up to the house, what with her being Liam's girlfriend and his wife probably not liking that. So Butch said, "Run it up there, Kellen, before the milk spoils." Now that I could see the girl was real, I didn't know what to say. Maybe that was all I needed. She stood there, holding the little boy by his overall straps and not saying a word. "Hey, Wavy," I said. I thought that was her name and the way she looked at me, like she was surprised I remembered. It must have been. She straightened up and let go of the baby.
"I didn't kill you?"
"Not even close. I'm as good as new. It wasn't your fault anyway." I said it real quick, not wanting her to feel bad, but she frowned. "Only I wasn't expecting to see you out there. When I hit that gravel and the front tire skidded, I overcorrected. Spilled the bike like an idiot. Not your fault. Anyway, I just wanted to say thanks for helping me." That was what I wanted for as long as she was looking at me. But when she looked past me, what I wanted more than anything was for her to look at me again. Most people look at you like nothing. But the way she looked at me, it was like we were in the meadow again. Like I was important. People don't usually look at me like that. "Is that Donald? He your brother?" She cocked her head and frowned. Up from the road, I heard this familiar rumble I couldn't place. I'd been just looking at her face, her hair and her eyes. Then I looked at all of her. She was wearing a coat with a backpack over her shoulders. "You going somewhere?" I said.
"School."
As soon as she said it, I felt like a dope. That was the bus she'd been listening for, and it was gone now. "I can give you a ride, okay? Since I made you miss the bus." She looked at me real serious and nodded. You wouldn't think someone as small as her could pick up a baby that size, but Wavy heaved him up on her hip. She was stronger than she looked. The baby set to wailing when she carried him away, and he was still going at it from somewhere in the house when she came back to the kitchen. I waited for her to say something, but she walked right out the door. I was making her late to school. I hadn't thought at all about how her riding on the bike was going to work, but I went at it the only way I could see. I put my hands around her waist and hoisted her up to the seat. Her back went all stiff and her eyes got wide, so I could tell I'd messed up. I let go of her like a hot potato, and she settled herself on the back of the bike. "Hold on tight, okay?" I said after I fired up the engine. She didn't answer, and she didn't touch me. I felt like a clod. Like I'd missed something important. "You ever rode on a bike before?" I looked at her in the side-view mirror. She frowned and shook her head. Figure that. Liam's kid, and she'd never been on a motorcycle? Most guys as crazy for bikes as him, they take their kids riding. "We're gonna go pretty fast, so you need to hold on to me. I don't want you to fall off," I said. Wasn't like she could put her arms all the way around me, but she got a grip on one side of my jacket and held on to my belt with her other hand. Out on the highway, her skirt fluttered around us, so I reached back and tucked it between us. Doing it, my hand brushed against her knee on accident, and she pulled back from me. Her being so light made me nervous, like having nothing on the back of the bike. I tapped the front brake to slide her closer to me, just to reassure myself she was there. Soon as I did, her hand loosened up where she was holding my jacket. For those couple seconds she wasn't touching me, my heart stopped. "Hold on tight! Don't let go!" I yelled. She got a grip back on my belt and my jacket. At the stoplight into town, we caught up to the bus and followed it to the school. I pulled the bike up on the front sidewalk, and as soon as I came to a stop, Wavy slid off the back. For a second, she teetered back and forth, trying to get her skirt untangled. I was worried she was about to tip over, but as I went to grab her, she rested her hand on my thigh to steady herself. Then she pushed off and ran up the sidewalk ahead of the kids coming off the bus. They all stared at me on my bike in the middle of the sidewalk. "Hey, Wavy, what time?" I yelled, She turned back and squinted at me. What time do I need to come pick you up?
She held up three fingers. The pack of kids off the bus caught up to her. One of them knocked shoulders with her, looked to me like on purpose. Then she dropped her hand and shoved her way into the building. I rode away feeling like I'd delivered her up to the gates of hell. I never liked school. Was always looking for excuses to stay away. But when I thought about the mess out at the farmhouse, I could see why Wavy wanted to go. All I was thinking as I rode back out there was that I could make things a little better for her. In a stranger's house, it was easy to see what needed doing. I went in there figuring I'd just wash the dishes. But then I couldn't leave the baby crying in dirty pants. It's not my favorite thing, but I can change a diaper. I got the kid cleaned up, and then I boiled a pot of oatmeal, skimming off the bugs as they floated to the top. When it cooled, I stirred in some crystallized honey and fed the kid that. He seemed to like it fine. Liked me okay, too, patting me and smiling great big while I talked to him. Until old man Kutchin took me on at the garage, I was a dishwasher at the truck stop. It's not hard. Kinda nice, even. Mindless. Scrubbing and rinsing. A couple things were too far gone. A burned and rusted skillet. A bowl of milk so rancid I about gagged over it. I took those out to the trash barrel behind the barn. It tore me up a little, seeing where Wavy had been trying to make things decent. There were clean baby bottles, and she must have been the one who scrubbed the bathtub to gray. I went over it with bleach and borax, got it damn near white. Took a good hour down on my hands and knees, scrubbing until my arm got to hurting where they put the screws in. For lunch, I scared up a can of tomato soup with some stale saltines. One bite for Donald, one bite for me. No worse than what I ate as a baby. Didn't stunt my growth none. By that point, I'd been there almost 4 hours, and I hadn't heard a peep out of Mrs. Quinn. It spooked me, so I went to her bedroom door and called her name.
"Leave me alone," she said.
The sheets on her bed were so dirty they'd turned yellow. I guess she must have got up at some point and took Wavy to enroll in school, unless Liam or one of his girlfriends did it. "Mrs. Quinn, are you hungry?" I said.
"Go away."
Once I had the kitchen and the bathroom cleaned, and Donald was napping, I looked around the rest of the house. Wavy's bedroom was up in the attic, squeezed into the roof line with a long window at each end. The window over the front porch had a trellis under it. Just bare dead vines in the winter. But Mike could be honeysuckle come spring. Wavy hadn't made her bed up, but the sheets looked clean and she had a homemade quilt on top. There was a set of shelves with some books and the kind of junk I used to collect when I was a kid. An old purple glass bottle, a cat skull, a rock with a hole in it, a hood ornament, a mannequin's hand. Just stuff that calls out to you. Up in the joists, a couple nails had dresses hanging on them. I lifted one up, and under it was an undershirt and a pair of panties. I lit out of there, feeling like a spy. I got back to the school just as the empty school buses pulled into the drive. That's why Wavy gave me a funny look when I asked her what time school let out. She'd missed the bus in, but she could have took the bus home. Except I'd said I was coming back for her. I didn't like to say that and not follow through. Too many folks do you that way. When Wavy came out, she had a pack of kids following her. She came down the sidewalk toward me, not looking right or left. I figured them kids must be hassling her, the way she looked. Little assholes. "Hey, Wavy," I said when she got to me. She climbed right up on the bike without any help, ready to get out of there. I put the bike in gear and roared away from them staring kids. I didn't have to tell her to hang on, either. She grabbed my jacket tight and didn't let go. There wasn't much food at the farmhouse, so I took us through the old biplane drive-thru to pick up some burgers and fries. They'd be cold from riding in the saddlebags on the trip back, but they'd still be good to eat. When we got to the house, Wavy looked downright scared as she pushed the door open and saw the kitchen. She let go of the doorknob and stepped back far enough to bump into me.
"Mama cleaned?"
she whispered. "No, I did it. I didn't have anything else to do today, and I figured you were busy at school. You know that used to be my job, doing dishes? It's good work. Kind of lets you turn your brain off. My favorite thing is plates and bowls, just making circles in them. There I'd wanted to do something nice, and she looked like she was gonna cry. I put my hand on her shoulder, meaning to hug her, I guess, but she put her hands against my belly and shoved me away. "I'm sorry, I didn't mean to..." She shivered hard, all the way down her back, before she stepped inside. I wasn't sure if she was mad, but she looked back at me, so I followed her. "Silverware you have to take more time washing," I said, "because of how food gets stuck in the forks. Eggs especially are a pain in the ass once they get dried onto something." It was easy to talk to Wavy that way. She didn't seem to care what I said, but her shoulders relaxed. "Man, I'm hungry. I hope these burgers aren't too cold." I made us up plates, a burger and fries on each one. She watched me do it, and when I put the plates down on the table, she got up in the chair across from me. I tucked in, wrestling with those little plastic packets of ketchup. She opened one. I figured for herself, but she squeezed it out onto my plate, then another one. The whole time I ate, she watched me, but didn't so much as touch her food. After I finished, she picked up the plate in front of her and carried it down the hall to Mrs. Quinn's room. I fixed Wavy another plate, but when she came back, she was toting Donald. "Here, why don't I hold him while you eat your dinner?" I said. She put the baby up on my lap, but she didn't sit down. Instead, she went around the kitchen, one little hand running along the edge of the sink, the range, the front of the icebox, like she was testing how clean they were. When she came to the end of the countertop, she stepped behind me. I went to turn around, but then I realized she was checking me out, making sure she could trust me. My neck prickled up from her watching me. "It hurts," she said. I rubbed down my hackles with the flat of my palm. Once my hair grew back out, you wouldn't even be able to see the scar running up the back of my head. "Nah, I told you, I'm about as good as new. It wasn't so bad, really." Besides the road rash going up my arm, I ended up with this scar like a centipede, the marks from the stitches coming off it like legs. She took another step to my left and looked at it. "That one hurts a little. They had to operate on me." I reached around Donald to hike my sleeve up and show her how long the scar was. Just that urge to show off a good scar. The way she frowned, I wished I hadn't. "It wasn't your fault," I said. "I know better than to come up that road so fast. It's lucky for me you were there. If I'd wrecked with nobody around, I might have died." She shook her head. She wasn't buying that.
6. Miss Degrassi. September 1977. Her first year teaching, Lisa Degrassi had Wavonna Quinn in her third grade class, one of 14 names on the roster. Lisa saw them all as possibilities. Most of the kids' parents came on the first day to meet the teacher, but Wavonna arrived alone and slipped into the desk nearest the door. "Hi, I'm Miss Degrassi. Are you in my class?" The girl unzipped her backpack and handed Lisa a copy of her enrollment form. Wavonna Quinn, age 8, parents Valerie and Liam Quinn, a rural root address. The handwriting was hardly legible, and at the bottom of the form, where there was a place for parents to write comments, allergies, health restrictions, someone had scrawled two short lines. The first was, "She won't talk." The second looked like, "Don't try to teach her." It unsettled Lisa. Were the Quinns backwoods anti-government types? Opposed to the public school system but legally required to send their child? Whatever her parents' politics, Wavonna didn't protest when Lisa moved her to a more central desk, and she eagerly filled out the math worksheet Lisa distributed after lunch. The problem came when it was time to pass the worksheets forward, and the boy behind Wavonna tapped her shoulder. She turned in her desk and punched him in the arm, sending the worksheets flying. "Wavonna!" Lisa stood at her desk, scrambling for something to say. "We are not allowed to hit." In the timeout desk at the back of the room, Wavonna seemed indifferent to punishment. With nothing to do, she didn't fidget or lay her head on the desk.
Given worksheets, she did them without complaint. During the planning period while the kids were at P.E., Lisa re-evaluated the scrawled note on Wavana's registration form. Don't try to touch her. At the end of the day, after the kids left, Stacy, the other third-grade teacher, came by to chat. She was a few years older than Lisa and the closest thing to a friend Lisa had found in Powell.
"You got the Quinn girl in your class?" Stacy said.
"Do you know her?"
"Not her. She transferred here from out of state. Her mother, though. I was in the office when she came to register the little girl for school."
It was a story Lisa would hear several times in the next few weeks. Valerie had been drunk or stoned. She slurred her words and could barely hold the pen to fill out the registration paperwork. She paid with a $100 bill. Registration costs were only $12 for the year, and walked off without her change. Her hair was a crazed rat's nest of knots, and she'd been wearing what one person described as a nightie, with black peekaboo stiletto pumps. And she stank. The assistant principal added that detail.
"I mean really stank, like she hadn't bathed in weeks."
Wavana did not stink. Her homework occasionally came back smelling of cigarettes, but there were other kids in the class with less care at home. Children who came in the same clothes 3 days in a row with sleep gummed in their eyes and their teeth unbrushed. Then there was Wavana's refusal to eat lunch. The fourth day of school, she wasn't with the rest of the class when Lisa went to escort them from the cafeteria. Wavana sat at the teacher's table with the tray in front of her and Mrs. Norton watching her.
"Is there a problem?" Lisa said.
"I have one rule for lunch. Everyone has to try a bite of everything. She won't."
Lisa disagreed with rules like that, but in her first week of teaching, there was no way to disagree with a 30-year veteran like Mrs. Norton. "When will you send her back to class?" Lisa said.
"After she tries a bite of everything."
At 2:55 p.m., just before the release bell, Wavana returned to class with a note from Mrs. Norton. Rather than try a bite of each item, she preferred to sit in the echoey cafeteria while the janitor cleaned. P.E. was also a dead end. While the other kids ran around, screaming and laughing, Wavana sat on the bleachers and read. Take away her book, and she would sit on the bleachers staring at nothing. She was stubborn, but at least she was smart. Her reading was above grade level, and she rarely scored less than 100% on her math worksheets. She was a problematic student, but she was less trouble than most. Then the first cold of the season went through school, and Wavana stayed out sick. 3 days later, she returned to school with a severe-looking woman who marched into the classroom and said, "Who's the teacher here?"
"I'm Miss Degrassi."
"I am Valerie Quinn."
The woman was tall and slender with brown hair, but this Mrs. Quinn didn't stink or slur her words. She was dressed in a white turtleneck, white slacks, red pumps, and she wore her hair pulled back from her bare face.
"How often do you disinfect the desks?" Mrs. Quinn said.
"I'm sure the janitor does it regularly."
"You're sure? How are you sure? Do you see the janitor do it? Or do you just assume that he does it?"
Lisa started to say, "I trust that the janitor is doing his job," but she never got to finish. Later, when she told the story, she found there was no way to exaggerate it for more laughs.
"It has to be every day. Every day. Say it with me. The desks have to be disinfected every day. Children are germy. They are covered in germs. These sweet little angels."
At that point in the story, Lisa swept her arm around her audience, one finger pointed accusingly at them, always aware that she would never master Valerie Quinn's contemptuous gesture.
"Our disgusting disease factories! These little angels are going to the bathroom and not washing their hands. They are bringing their germs back to this classroom and smearing them over every surface."
The diatribe lasted until the cafeteria lady sent Mr. Bunder, the P.E. teacher, to see why Lisa's students were late to lunch. He found them in the thrall of Mrs. Quinn's unrelenting account of their hygiene failures. Mr. Bunder was able to convince her to come down to the front office,
where she unloaded on the principal and the janitor and the school nurse, too. When it was over, Mr. Bunder sacrificed his planning hour to keep Lisa's students in the gym, while Lisa went back to her room to recover. Alone, she sat at her desk and cried. When she lifted her head, she found Wayvana sitting on the bench under the coat rack, reading a book. She had been there all along while her mother rampaged.
"Are you okay, sweetie?"
Lisa said. Without looking up, Wayvana nodded. It made Lisa wish there was something worth calling Child Protective Services over. A suspicious bruise, an appearance of malnutrition, anything to get that little girl away from her crazy mother. Mr. Bunder's take on the situation was slightly different. After having Wavy in his PE classes for 2 months, he suggested having a kid like that would make you bonkers.
"Which came first, the crazy chicken or the crazy egg?" he said.
In November, things got better. Maybe it was the influence of Wayvana's father, who started dropping her off and picking her up most days. That was the same time she started writing Wavy on her papers instead of Wayvana. When the crazy mother and the Hell's Angels' father failed to show up for parent-teacher conferences, Lisa mailed a letter to the house. Then she called, but no one answered. Finally, she did what she'd been too cowardly to do in the first place. At the end of the day, she walked Wavy out to where Mr. Quinn waited on his motorcycle, his hands resting on ape-hanger handlebars. With his leather jacket hanging open, Lisa could see sweat stains under the arms of his greasy T-shirt. He was huge and meaty, and if Wavy hadn't been there, Lisa might have backed down from her intention to confront him.
"Hi, I'm Miss Degrassi. I'm Wavy's teacher," he nodded. "I was sorry we didn't see you and Mrs. Quinn at open house, but I'd like to meet with you to talk about how Wavy's doing. I sent a letter about conferences. Maybe you didn't get it?"
Sorry, he said.
"Maybe you could come in right now. It would only take a few minutes."
He looked at Wavy, and Lisa had the weirdest feeling he was waiting for instructions.
All the lights were on, but nobody was home?
Wavy nodded.
"Okay," he said.
In her classroom, Lisa kept 2 adult chairs for parent conferences, but even they seemed too small for him. As big as he was, he hardly seemed old enough to have an 8-year-old daughter, but Lisa had learned her lesson on that subject. Grandfathers who turned out to be fathers, a mother so young Lisa mistook her for a student's older sister. Mr. Quinn looked young, sitting across from her like a kid who'd been called to the principal's office. Wayvana, Wavy, is already over the big hurdles in 3rd grade, multiplication and learning to write longhand. Lisa had kept back a sample of Wavy's penmanship to show him, a little essay she'd written about the Voyager 1 and 2 launches. He looked at it long enough to read it, but didn't say anything. "But she's still not participating in PE class. I was wondering if we could find a way to encourage her." Mr. Quinn shifted in his chair and said,
"What's P.E.?"
"Gym class. They call it physical education now. P.E. for short."
"Oh."
"The other thing that concerns me is Wavy's speech. You don't have to decide today, but I want you to think about having Wavy meet with the school's speech therapist. It won't cost anything. It's part of the district's services that are provided to all students, and I really think..."
"I don't need a speech therapist," Wavy said.
Until then, Lisa had heard Wavy say exactly 3 things: don't, no, and asshole, which earned her a trip to the office, where the principal butted his head against her indifference to punishment.
"Oh,"
Lisa said. At a look from Wavy, Mr. Quinn stood up, his wallet chain rattling against his leg.
"That it?" he said.
Thank you for coming in."
After that, Lisa gave up. No wonder Wavy didn't talk. Her role models were a crazy woman who wouldn't shut up and a man who barely spoke. What could you do with a child who had that at home?
7. Kellen. November 1977. At the bike shop in Geringer, Marilyn came around the counter with a big smile and said, "Oh my God, Where did this angel come from? I didn't know you had a little girl.
She's not my little girl, I said.
Who is she then? Whose little angel are you? That hair is just baby fine, isn't it?
Marilyn reached out to touch Wavy's hair, so I shifted to block her. She needs a helmet, I said. Sitting there with that teacher thinking I was Liam, I realized it was plain reckless to let Wavy ride without a helmet. Never mind Liam. I wouldn't be able to forgive myself if I wrecked and got Wavy's brain scrambled. Marilyn brought out three kids' helmets, a plain black one, a blue and white striped one, and a pink one.
I bet I know which one you'd like, Marilyn said.
Yeah, like hell Wavy wanted a pink helmet. She pointed at the black helmet, which was just a small version of a Daytona with a visor. It fit her, so that was a done deal. While Marilyn rang up the helmet, Wavy walked down the boot aisle, running her fingertip across the toes. Her old snow boots looked cheap and worn out, so I said, "See any you like?" She nodded. Marilyn stuck right with us, kept trying to get close to Wavy. The way Wavy looked, all sweet and blonde, people were probably all the time trying to paw her. A lot of times I'd almost go to touch her hair before I remembered not to. The way I figured it, she'd let me know when it was okay. To keep Marilyn from touching her, I had to get down on my knee to adjust the shoe sizer against Wavy's toe. She smiled at me, her cheeks a little pink. I could see what she was thinking. "I'm not a shoe salesman," I said. That made her smile bigger, almost showed her teeth.
"So she's not your daughter?" Marilyn said.
"No, she's not my daughter. What was I supposed to say? She's my bike bitch?" Not everything has a simple answer. I said, "She's a friend of mine." Wavy picked a pair of boys' square-toed boots, good leather to last her for a while. They were a little big, but watching her walk across the store, half strutting, half stomping, I could tell she liked them. "You'll have room to grow," I said. She nodded. Wavy wore her new boots out of the store, left her ratty old ones there. She looked happy. Actually waited for me to help her up on the bike, even though she didn't need it. "I need to put in another set of foot pegs. Put them up high enough for you so you don't have to put your feet on the bike frame," I said. She'd looked happy before, but she grinned when I mentioned the pegs. That was worth all the weird looks from Marilyn, to get not one or two smiles out of Wavy, but a smile that lasted the whole ride back from Geringer. At the farmhouse, I figured we'd read or play games until dinner time. But no sooner did I turn off the bike than Val opened the kitchen door. It shocked the hell out of me. I'd only seen Val out of bed a couple times, and there she was with her hair done, wearing clothes and shoes.
"Where have you been, Vonnie? You should have been home from school hours ago," she said.
Wavy stood on the bottom step, but she didn't move. I didn't know what to do.
"Get in here before you catch cold," Val said. "Now!"
Finally, I got off the bike, and then Wavy started up the stairs. When she got to the door, Val said,
"Give Callan his helmet."
When Wavy didn't, Val took it away from her. By then, I'd come up the steps, and Val handed it to me, smacking it into my palm, hard enough to sting.
"She's supposed to ride the bus, Callan."
If she'd gave me a few seconds, I would have said, "It's her helmet." But before I could, Val slammed the door in my face.
8. Wavy. May 1978. All winter, Callan was in charge of grocery shopping. I liked it that way, because he bought exactly what I wrote down. If I wrote 3 cans green beans, he brought back 3 cans of green beans. Not 1, not 10, not a bag full of things Donald wouldn't eat. That was what Mama did, bring home cream of mushroom soup when I wrote down cream of celery. Grandma's recipe book didn't have anything that called for cream of mushroom. Mama couldn't be trusted, and neither could Ricky. She always lost the grocery list, and Mama said she was one of Liam's dirty whores. When Callan brought me home from school on Wednesday, I wrote a grocery list out of Grandma's book. The recipe had Grandma's fingerprints stained in hamburger blood.
"You're making something good, I bet. What is this?"
Callan said. He propped his hands on the table, reading the list.
Meatloaf. For you.
Oh, hey, I wasn't fishing for an invitation.
For you, I said. In 2 weeks, school would be over for the summer, and Kellen wouldn't have a reason to come in the house, except that he liked to eat. If I cooked, he might keep coming to sit at the table with me and let me watch him eat. While I waited for him to get groceries, I cleaned and set the table. Grandma's book had pictures showing where forks and spoons went. Water glasses, wine glasses. That's where Kellen's beer bottle went. He came back smelling like the road and sweat. I wanted to bury my face in his shirt and smell him, the way I did when he wrecked. But I wasn't brave enough, and he was carrying bags of food and scary news.
I saw Liam on the road in. He wanted to know what I was getting. So I told him, and he said, "Is Val making her mom's green olive meatloaf?"
All the happiness crumpled up in my chest like a wad of tinfoil. I shook my head. Not at Kellen. But to make it not true.
I'm sorry. I didn't know what to tell him. He says he's coming to dinner at 6.
I laid the potatoes out on the table and petted them like little animals. They were dirty but good potatoes. Small enough for me to hold them in my hands to peel. Kellen thought of those things.
What do you want me to do? He said.
Stay. Going into Mama's room, I didn't want to touch her, but she was already awake.
What is it, baby? Who's here?
Liam not to be trusted, I whispered.
Liam's here?
Mama sat up, her hair all knots and sticking out. Coming.
He's coming here? When?
Mama looked at her alarm clock, but it only flashed 12 because she never set it after thunderstorms.
How long until he comes?
I held up 2 fingers.
2 hours. I can get ready. Is there shampoo? And don't be weird when he's here. Call him Daddy, okay? Just say, "Hi, Daddy," okay, baby? We do that for Mama?
Call him Daddy. When she was the one who said I wasn't supposed to call him that. She said he was not to be trusted. Back in the kitchen, Kellen stood next to the table. I said, "Stay," and he stayed. He didn't fuss like Mama. Sometimes he asked me about what I was doing, like why I put bread in the bottom of the meatloaf pan. I liked that he asked and didn't get upset if I didn't answer. He said,
"Can I do anything to help?"
And he did what I asked. He fed Donald, kept him out of the way when I opened the oven door, and put him in his room before dinner, so he would be safe. Donald was 2. I knew that, but I didn't know his birthday. We never had presents or cake for him, but I didn't remember having presents or cake until I went to live with Aunt Brenda. Now that Donald could walk by himself, it was harder to keep him safe. At least pretty soon he would be big enough to take care of himself. Next year. Once the potatoes were cooked, Kellen mashed them, and he never got tired and had to rest like I did. All 10 pounds of potatoes mashed at once. While Kellen mashed, I prayed. Let Liam not come. Make Liam stay away. He always said he would do something and then never did it. When I was little, he said he would take me to the zoo. He never did. So let him stay away. Stay away. Kellen turned the meatloaf out of the pan on the platter, and then he understood what the bread was for. It soaks up the grease. I laid the carrots around the meatloaf, and Kellen put the potatoes in a bowl. The table looked perfect when Mama came out of the bathroom. Her hair fell in shiny brown curls over the shoulders of her silky red kimono. She was so pretty, but her face pinched up when she saw the food and Kellen.
"What's this?" she said.
"Wavy made dinner," Kellen said.
"Where's Liam? She said he was coming at 6."
"It's 6 now. She made meatloaf."
It didn't matter how much I prayed for Liam to stay away, if Mama was going to say his name without the protection. She made him come, whistling as he walked across the porch, smiling as he walked in without knocking.
"This looks good, Val. When Kellen said you were making your mom's special meatloaf, I said, I have to get some of that."
The whole time Liam talked, he was creeping down on Mama, his hand sneaking on her neck. She gave him her special smile, going softer, the way candles are softer than light bulbs. Liam pulled out Mama's chair for her, and then he looked around the table, counting. 4 plates.
You staying for dinner, Kellen?
Yeah, she invited me.
Then Liam smiled the smile that meant he was not to be trusted.
Oh, Kellen gives you a hand with things, does he, Val?
Mama pouted.
You never come around. I guess I need someone to take care of things since you can't be bothered.
Why should I be bothered when you don't even wash your hair?
I washed my hair.
First time in a long goddamn time. I almost didn't recognize you.
Mama cried while Kellen put food on the plates. Liam frowned. He didn't like watching Kellen serve dinner. As much as I didn't like Liam eating the dinner I cooked.
Does Val make you a lot of nice meals while I'm off taking care of the business that puts food on the table?
Liam said.
Wavy invited me.
Kellen took a bite of meatloaf.
Oh, Wavy invited you,
Liam said. Kellen finished chewing before he said,
Yeah.
For a while, nobody said anything. Kellen kept eating. Potatoes went into his mouth and the fork came out shiny. I loved the way he ate. I wanted to eat like that.
That's a load of crap, Liam said.
I invited Kellen.
I thought the words might burn my tongue, but seeing Liam's stupid mouth hang open was worth it. Sometimes he forgot that I didn't talk, not that I couldn't talk. He blinked and ate some meatloaf.
This is really good, Val. You're as good a cook as your mother.
Mama smiled. She wanted any nice words, even if she didn't deserve them.
Just about got everything ready for Myrtle Beach, Liam said.
You're going this year? Mama said.
Yeah, baby. We'll take the bikes down. Take some product to sell. A little business, a little pleasure.
I know your kind of business.
Mama made an ugly face. Kellen swallowed quick and said,
Which bike you riding down? Eat your dinner, Vonnie, Liam said.
Safer to nod, even if it was a lie. I should have nodded, but I stared at my plate.
I said eat your dinner.
I hated being afraid, but I picked up my fork. I moved a bite of mashed potatoes away from the mountain. Kellen bought real butter, not margarine. I could never get the lumps out, but he'd mashed the potatoes creamy smooth. They were beautiful.
So you're leaving tomorrow?
Kellen was talking to Liam, but he sent a message to me. Just take a bite.
Yeah, you're ready to go tomorrow, right?
I tried to send Kellen a message. Don't go. I think he got it, because he squinted hard.
I didn't know I was going, he said. Shit, yeah. I told you, buy out old man Kuchian and you'll have a long line of guys wanting you to work on their bikes. You and me can do some other business that way, too. You don't want that? No, yeah, I do. I just didn't know you wanted me to go to Myrtle Beach. You got other obligations?
Liam said. Me. Kellen didn't say it, and I let him go, so he would stop frowning. I didn't want him to be sad. I cut my carrots into neat little circles like pennies.
No, that's great. Just wish you'd said something sooner. God damn it, Vonnie! Eat your food and stop moving it around on your plate!
Liam smacked his hand on the table next to my plate. He had the power to steal Kellen away, but he didn't have power over me. I laid my fork on the table, but as soon as I let go of it, Liam snatched it up.
Don't you defy me, you little bitch!
He shoveled up a scoop of potatoes. My mouth watered at the smell. I wanted to eat, but I wouldn't do it like that. Liam pressed the fork up to my mouth, so I turned my head away from him, felt the potatoes smear across my cheek. I looked at Kellen, the way his eyes went up and down from his plate to Liam and back to his plate. He was scared. Liam grabbed my chin. That's how mad he was. Mad enough to break Mama's rule against touching me. He jerked my head around to keep me from looking at Kellen, so I closed my eyes. I bit my lips closed to keep the potatoes out, but Liam wouldn't quit.
You'll fucking do what I say!
The fork stabbed my lip and knocked against my teeth. Liam squeezed my face hard, trying to make me open my mouth. And I was going to. I wasn't strong enough. Then Liam let go of me. The fork fell on my plate, a loud clatter in the middle of glasses falling over. I opened my eyes and saw Kellen standing up, leaning across the table. He had one hand pressed to the center of Liam's chest to push him back into his chair. That was all he needed to stop Liam, who looked small under Kellen's hand.
"Don't do that,"
Kellen said. As soon as he let go, Liam sat up. All his smallness drained out, and anger rushed in again.
"Are you telling me how to discipline my own kid in my house?"
Liam said, but his shirt was still rumpled from Kellen's hand.
"No, but you don't need to do her that way."
Kellen sat down and smoothed the tablecloth back out.
"I'll be damned if I take orders from you, you fat fucking slob,"
Liam said.
"You want your kid to end up a fat fucking slob like me? Just go on doing that, forcing her to eat. It's what my pa did. Made me clean my plate whether I wanted to or not. Busted my jaw once. So, you know, think about that."
Liam laughed. He lost the fight, but everyone would have to pretend he hadn't. Mama knew how to pretend that.
"Well, damn, you're sensitive, Kellen. I'm gonna be more careful around you. I don't want to hurt your little feelings and shit."
Kellen took another bite of meatloaf. It looked like it was hard for him to swallow, but he kept eating. I watched him chew, wishing I could eat. Something sticky and warm dribbled down my chin. Blood. Mama watched, too soft to do anything. Kellen passed me his handkerchief under the table. When I took it, I felt how strong his hand was. I didn't understand how he could be afraid of Liam when he was so much bigger. Kellen's handkerchief was worn soft from being washed, and I didn't want to ruin it, but I put it against my mouth. When I took it away, my blood was bright in the middle of the whiteness. Liam set his glass up and said,
"Get me some more beer, Val."
Mama went to the fridge and took out a beer. She poured as much as would go into Liam's, and then she topped up Kellen's glass, even though it hadn't fallen over. The giant had stopped a train, calmed a wild beast, and didn't even spill his beer. 9. Wavy. Mama was old Val when she woke up the next morning. She shaved under her arms, between her legs, and all down them. After she curled her hair, she put on makeup and the tight clothes Liam liked. No breakfast for her, except for the pills that made her eyes sparkle and her hands float. I was waiting for her to leave the room so I could eat my oatmeal before it got cold. "Come on," Mama said. "Get your shoes on." No oatmeal. No school. I pulled on my boots, the good ones Kellen bought. "Room to grow," he said. "At least your hair's combed," Mama said. It wasn't, but Grandma said it was so fine knots couldn't stay in it. Braids and ponytails slithered out of rubber bands like snakes. Mama was at the door, ready to go. "Donald," I said. I think she really forgot about him. Shit, I must be losing my mind. Mama hauled him out of the playpen like that was all she had to do. I went around stuffing things into a shopping bag. Diapers, a bottle, shoes. Real babies are a lot more trouble than plastic babies. In the barn, the car wouldn't start, so Mama hiked down the gravel road to the trailers, saying swear words. "Isn't Kellen a goddamn mechanic? Can't he make sure that car will fucking start? Donald, you weigh a ton, kid. What have you been eating?" Old Val talked fast and laughed. In the yard outside Dee's trailer, people were loading motorcycles on trailers. I heard Kellen's voice coming from the garage, but when I stopped to look for him, Mama snapped her fingers in my ear. "Come on, daydreamer." I followed her up the clattery metal steps into the trailer, where the TV was on loud and something smelled sweet and cinnamony. It made my stomach growl. Ricky and Dee were sitting in the kitchen, eating coffee cake and laughing. Dee talked with her mouth full, mouth open for two dangerous things. Double bad. She said,
"No way in hell."
Liam was still laughing about it. He said, "I guess Kellen's a little touchy about his weight." Ricky said.
Kellen wouldn't say boo to Liam. He's a big old cream puff.
You didn't see him beat the crap out of that guy over at the Rusted Bucket. I think he's scary in his own lumbering retard way.
Ricky always said mean things about Kellen, but she was stupid. You'd have to be stupid to like Liam and not Kellen. Dee laughed until she saw Mama standing there, glaring. Hate rippled off Mama and fluttered against my skin. It made my stomach hurt.
Get up off your asses, you fucking whores. I don't stand in my own house,
Mama said.
It's not your house, Ricky said.
The hell it isn't. Everything that's his is mine. I'm his wife. If I told him to, he'd kick you to the curb.
I wasn't sure Mama had that kind of power over Liam, but Ricky and Dee must have thought so, because they stood up. Mama put Donald on the floor, sat down, and lit one of their cigarettes.
Where is he? She said.
Out in the lab.
Go get him.
When he came to the trailer, Liam's smile didn't touch me and only brushed over Donald before it burned on Mama.
God, you look fantastic, baby, he said.
She stood up, all glowy, waiting for him to kiss her. He leaned her against the edge of the table, and his hand found the special place between her legs. There was no rule against him touching Mama there. Mama giggled. Are we leaving for Myrtle Beach this morning?
You're coming? What about the kids, Val?
They can go to Brenda's. It looks like you've got plenty of people sitting around doing nothing.
Mama looked at Ricky and Dee in the doorway. Yeah. Dee, why don't you take the charger? Drive them down to her sister's.
He didn't even look at her. With Mama there? Dee was invisible. Like me. 10. Dee. As Dee backed out of the drive, she realized she didn't know where she was going. She looked in the rearview mirror at Liam's daughter, who was cute as could be, but creepy. Even if she knew where they were going, she wouldn't say a word to Dee. She never had. Leaving the kids in the car, Dee walked back to the house. Liam had Val on his lap, his hand up her short skirt.
Where am I going? Dee said.
To her sister's in Tulsa.
Liam didn't even bother to move his hand. He was so gorgeous, all that blonde hair and tan from being out on the bike.
I know, but what's the address?
Her arm around Liam's neck, Val winked at Dee. 14322 Fawn Hill Circle. Do you think you can find that? They had been friends once, and Dee felt sorry for Val. She was seriously messed up, and whatever was wrong with her, it had created a chance for Dee. If Val were okay, why would Liam waste his time on Dee? She drove Kellen's charger, faster than she should have, and risked getting pulled over. An hour outside the city, the little boy started whining and crying. It made Dee glad she hadn't done something stupid like get knocked up. Of course, that was how Val got Liam, popping out babies for him, popping out a son.
It wouldn't stop crying.
Can't you make him be quiet? Dee said.
The crying didn't seem to bother Wavy, but it rattled Dee's nerves so much that she got the address turned around in her head. At 13422 Fawn Hill Circle, the man who answered the door looked confused. Val asked me to drop the kids off, Dee said.
I think you've got the wrong address.
She tried the neighbors and got the same thing. Cruising down the block, Dee felt helpless and panicked. If she didn't get back by dark, the rest of the guys would have left already, and she'd be stuck at the ranch while Liam partied at Myrtle Beach, with Val. From the back seat, Wavy said, There. Dee slammed on the brakes, and as she looked at the houses, Liam's daughter opened the door and stepped out of the car. She left the door open as she crossed the street and started up the walk in front of a neat yellow house. It almost made Dee sick how neat it was. Grass trimmed, white shutters, station wagon out front. The kind of thing Dee would have ended up with if she'd listened to her mother's advice. Throwing the car into park, Dee hurried around to the open door to get Donald. If she could make the handoff and get on the road, it would be okay.
Who are you?
Val's sister came down the sidewalk. Val asked me to drop the kids off.
What do you mean, drop them off? For how long?
Probably just a week or so. Dee shoved the baby at Val's sister, who finally held out her arms and took him. She looked stunned, but that was her problem. Let her be stunned. Then Dee was flying down the interstate, feeling giddy and excited. Until she remembered that Val was riding behind Liam with her arms around him. And what would Dee do? The same thing Ricky would do. Look around for whatever fun she could get that Liam wouldn't find out about. That probably meant being with one of the guys. Somebody who had as much to lose as she did if they got caught. Because Liam was jealous unless it was his idea. If he said, "Why don't you give Vic a good time?" then that was okay. Unless he thought you'd enjoyed it too much, and that'd come back to bite you. It was still light out when Dee got back to the ranch. In the front yard, four bikes stood ready to go, with four more on a trailer behind the truck. Kellen was loading up a pair of toolboxes.
"Am I riding with you? Give me 5 minutes," Dee called as she stepped out of the Charger.
She needed a shower, but maybe she would just grab some makeup and clean clothes so she didn't look like a piece of shit next to Val. Kellen shrugged. He wasn't retarded, but he was definitely slow. Dee thought it was that fetus alcohol thing. That's why his eyes were slanted, too. Or that was because he was an Indian. Flat-faced, too. About as homely as a mud fence. At least he waited for her. When she came out of the trailer, he was the only one there. He jammed her pack into his saddlebag. Then he swung his leg over the bike and started it. The sound of a big engine firing up always got Dee right in her cunt, and riding behind him, who cared what Kellen looked like? She leaned into him on the highway, smoothed her hands over his belly, down to his belt buckle. They stopped before dawn. Two of the guys bedded down in the truck, and Kellen paid for two hotel rooms. Nobody said a word about how to divvy them up, but it was four people, four beds. Butch and Liam were way old friends, and Terry had rotten teeth. That left Kellen. Alicia, one of the girls from last summer, had screwed Kellen as a favor to Liam. She said he was hung, polite but sweaty and awkward, like having sex with a walrus.
"You've had sex with a walrus?"
Ricky had asked, and they all died laughing, stoned out of their minds. At least sex with Kellen would take Dee's mind off Liam. Or it would if Kellen weren't so shy. Alone with her, he didn't leer when she came out of the bathroom in a too small motel towel. He didn't even look at her, even though she stood between him and the TV. When he finally looked up, she dropped the towel.
"Are you too tired?" she said.
"Not too much, I guess."
"I guess? God, she didn't ask for romance, but could he show a little enthusiasm?" Not wanting the walrus experience, she pushed him back on the bed and opened his fly. As advertised, he had some equipment, what you'd expect from a guy his size. Also, he didn't try to kiss her, and he lasted long enough for her to get off. She went into the bathroom to clean up, and when she came out, Kellen was taking off his boots.
"Thanks," he mumbled.
It surprised her. She hadn't really thought about the fact that she was doing him a favor. She hadn't thought about him at all. Pulling back the covers on the other bed, she crawled in, relieved that she wouldn't have to sleep next to him.
"Here."
He opened his wallet and counted out some money. Dee never liked taking money for it, but she folded the bills into her purse. When she was with Liam, money wasn't a problem. But what were the odds he'd even notice her with Val there? She needed the cash. Kellen met her gaze for a second before he looked away.
"I don't mean... it's not... Liam told me to give you this."
"Oh, cool." Curling on her side away from him, Dee tried to think of something nice to say and couldn't. Kellen was a lousy liar, and he snored. 11. Amy. Mom came back to the kitchen with a crying little boy in her arms. She sat down and cried too, rocking him back and forth on her lap. It scared me until I saw Wavy standing in the doorway with bruises on her face and a fresh scab under her lower lip. Then it all made sense.
Oh, my God,
Mom said. What am I?